Welcome to The Lead, the exclusive news magazine of Northeast Texas, here on your station, 88.9 KETR. Good morning, I'm your host, Scott Harvey. This week, a conversation with Kevin Story, an inland fisheries biologist with the Texas Parks and Wildlife Department, and he has the latest on how the drought is impacting our region.
If we don't get rain, then operations of our hatcheries are in jeopardy. So that translates to decreased availability of fish for stocking.
And what makes a library a unique experience for local residents?
Pretty much every day of the week, there's something for some group of kids, and they literally have a program, at least one program, every day.
Those topics are coming up after we check out the week's headlines. Here on The Lead, on your station, 88.9 KETR.
I'm not sure who it was that decided Texas music is supposed to be strictly country or western, but man, I wish that person would join me for Notably Texan, a 3-hour tour of all the music of the Lone Star State. Rock, funk, jazz, blues, if it's produced here in Texas, it's played on Notably Texan. I'm Matt Minky, inviting you to enjoy the music of Texas tonight at 6 during Notably Texan. Your station, 88.9 KETR.
It doesn't take long to notice that KETR is quite different from the others along the radio dial. Smart programming, diverse voices, intriguing opinions, and no commercials. Those are just a few of the reasons you've made 88.9 your choice for listening. We need to remind you that listener support is vital to our existence. We're asking you to dig deep and help us cover the costs of running a great public radio station. Make a pledge right now at ketr.org/support. And thanks.
And welcome back to The Lead. It's now time to check out the news making headlines this week here in our region. A Leonard couple and their daughter were the victim of gunshot wounds. Autopsy results confirmed this week the identities of 73-year-old Harold Harps, his 79-year-old wife Sue, and 48-year-old Regina Taunton. The suspect, 52-year-old Thomas Taunton, has been returned to Texas after his arrest last week in Louisiana. A Greenville man is charged with public lewdness after he was observed alleging having sex with a miniature horse. 56-year-old Larry D. Carruth was spotted by a game warden and landowner near Cattle Mills. Carruth fought with the officer last Saturday, tried to take his gun. He was eventually arrested. Greenville resident Jessica Jones has been sentenced to 15 years for identity theft as part of a widespread operation that included more than a dozen defendants. She was among a group of four indicted alleged to have obtained and or used identification information from nearly 100 people in 2010. A 30-year prison sentence issued in 2010 for Joshua William Lay has been upheld. Lay was convicted for the murder of Daryl Wayne Feggett, which Lay argued was in self-defense. The Sixth Court of Appeals in Texarkana upheld the ruling on Tuesday. George Stephen Cook and Melanie Smith have been formally charged by a grand jury in the October 2011 death of Smith's husband, David. Authorities say David's death occurred following a night of heavy drinking and after he allegedly confronted Cook. Two Delta County citizens are jailed on suspicion of wire theft after a large amount of rolled highline wire and wire cutting pole was found in their vehicle. Arthur David Chancellor and Donna Jo Chancellor are alleged to have stolen from poles and lines of Lamar County Cooperative. Enrollment at Paris Junior College is at 5,785 students for the spring, counter to reports of community colleges statewide that are seeing either flat enrollment or drops in enrollment. The figures at PJC represent 7 more students than in the spring of 2010 and 287 more than in 2011. Al Swanson, an aerospace engineer with L3 Communications, has received Greenville's Most Worthy Citizen for 2011. Swanson was announced during last night's Chamber of Commerce and Board of Development banquet, which featured a keynote address from Eric Nadel, voice of the Texas Rangers. The first cohort of Hispanic families begins services at the Commerce Community Plaza on February 6th. A grand opening was held on Monday for the plaza, which aims to educate Hispanic young people and adults for success in their life and work. This is the 13th plaza that the Mexican consulate has opened in the region. It's the first east of the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex. Northeast Texans are among the motorists to experience faster interstate speeds upon implementation within a couple of months. 75 miles per hour will now line 1,500 miles of Texas freeways, including 139 miles of Interstate 30, impacting Hunt, Hopkins, Titus, Morris, and Bowie counties. And Greenville's Firefighter Combat Challenge Team Rack Solutions will compete in the Big D Star Climb. That's Saturday morning from the Fountain Place in Dallas. In 2011, sponsors and climbers raised $100,000 for the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society. And those are some of the stories making headlines this week here in our Northeast Texas region. Coming up next, a conversation with Kevin Story, an inland fisheries biologist with the Texas Parks and Wildlife Department. That's next. This is The Lead on your station, 88.9 KETR.
Hey everyone, it's Gabby from Lions After Dark, inviting you to have lunch with us on Friday. Join me and Jasmine Trejo for Lions After Dark at Lunch, broadcasting live from the Sam Rayburn Student Center this Friday. We'll have the scoop on the latest trends and awesome entertainment for this weekend. Join us Friday at 11 a.m. on your station, 88.9 KETR.
Listener support is what makes KETR stand out from other stations. Because you value the wide range of music you hear every day on KETR, we hope you'll make a pledge now to support it. With your donation, we'll be able to bring you another year of news and entertainment. Do your part today by pledging online. Go to KETR.org and click Support This Station. You know, every dollar makes a difference. Thank you.
Welcome back to The Lead on your station, 88.9 KETR. And joining me now by phone is Kevin Story, an inland fisheries biologist with the Texas Parks and Wildlife Department. He is a managing supervisor in District 3, which includes Delta, Hunt, Hopkins, Lamar, Raines, Wood, and Van Zandt counties. And Kevin, thanks for being with us. Can you describe to our listeners what your job responsibilities entail?
The major responsibility is to do fishery surveys in any of those counties on public reservoirs, so reservoirs that have public access, and then we evaluate the fish populations and determine if the fishing regulations that are in effect on those regulations are appropriate or if they need to be changed. And then we can also make recommendations for improvements like fish stocking. Or, you know, we may be asked to provide an opinion on, you know, a proposal or something of that nature. So that's the core of what we do, but there's all kinds of other ancillary jobs that we end up, you know, getting involved with.
And could you name the lakes that are in the area you cover?
Lake Fork, Cooper Reservoir, Lake Tawakoni, and Pat Mays. They're the biggest ones, but then there are a number of smaller lakes, Mill Creek, Lake Hawkins, Lake Holbrook, Lake Quitman, Lake Winsboro, Lake Crook, Sulphur Springs. So basically any public reservoir in those counties, we're responsible for surveying.
Kevin, what's the biggest difference when it comes to your job dealing with drought as you are now compared to working in good productive seasons?
The most noticeable impact that we've had in our day-to-day operations, there have been a couple of our lakes that we have not been able to sample. One lake we haven't been able to sample at all, Big Creek. It's a small reservoir just on the outskirts of Cooper. The water level is too low to launch a boat, so we haven't been able to do our normal sampling. And then even on Cooper, we had to sample during the day when we routinely sample at night. And we're concerned that if we don't get rain, appreciable rain between now and spring, that we won't be able to do some additional sampling that we're scheduled to do. So that's the most noticeable impact that we've had. But on a longer term, if we don't get rain, then operations of our hatcheries are in jeopardy, And then, so that translates to decreased availability of fish for stocking. Not a good thing, because some of our hatcheries are, you know, pretty close to having to shut down because they can't get water. I guess that puts people's jobs, you know, potentially in jeopardy.
From a consumer perspective, what's the biggest difference you notice in these drought times around these area lakes?
Well, probably the most noticeable impact has been decreased access on some lakes. Then on all of our lakes, you know, they've got stands of what's usually submerged timber, and that's become more visible. You know, that does create some access challenges for boaters. If they're not careful, they can run into them a little easier than they could before.
I remember several months ago, there were several ramps that had to be closed over at Cooper Lake because of low lake levels. Is that still the case?
Yeah, there is only one ramp on Cooper that is open, and that's the Doctor's Creek ramp. And it's limited to small boats, flat-bottom boats. And apparently what some people are doing is launching their boat and basically wading it out into deeper water before they can get onto the lake. But essentially the lake is, you know, to all intents and purposes, closed to fishing.
Okay. How long has it been like that?
Around October, access, you know, started to become harder and harder. And even in October, I think Doctor's Creek was still the only ramp that was usable.
We're speaking with Kevin Story, an inland fisheries biologist with the Texas Parks and Wildlife Department. He is the management supervisor in District 3B. When we get a rain like we did Tuesday night and Wednesday morning, what seems significant and what is building up on the roadways, what can be hazardous for motorists, how significant is that for the depth of the situation at Cooper Lake, at Lake Tewakene, things of that nature?
It's hard to tell, you know, what impact, say, an inch of rain will have on the reservoir. And, you know, part of that is determined by how dry the land is to begin with. So, I mean, if right at the end of the summer, it probably wouldn't have had a whole lot of impact because most of it would just be absorbed by that parched land.
Mm-hmm.
As far as impact on the reservoir, it depends how much rain you have on the entire watershed and not just necessarily, you know, on the lake proper. Certainly on the watershed of Cooper Reservoir, it is subject to pretty rapid rises in lake elevation. When the lake was first impounded, there were estimates that it was going to take years for the reservoir to fill, and it basically came up in a couple of weeks. I wouldn't feel comfortable just estimating, you know, what impact a couple of inches will have, but, you know, it does have the potential to rise quite rapidly.
And some lakes can rise rapidly, as you said, and some don't rise rapidly at all. And that becomes an issue for the cities that are receiving their water from those particular lakes. Sulphur Springs comes to mind. They receive their water from Cooper Lake. I believe there's been some concern over there about the lake levels at Cooper, but Lake Tewakene, I don't think the lake levels have been as bad. In fact, the City of Commerce receives their water from Tewakene. And in a recent report to the council, the concern was minimal. So can you speak to the differences in terms of how those lakes receive and kind of maintain their water?
Tewakene has not, the fluctuation there or the reduction in elevation has not been near as bad as it is at Cooper. Cooper's been down almost 12 feet currently, and Tewakene is just under 6. And back in 2006, they were both, you know, 12, 14 feet or more. And at the time, Lake Fork, I think, was only 4 or 5 feet down, but Lake Fork was down to about 7.5. So it's been the impact on Lake Fork has been a lot harder than it has been on Tewakene. Depends on how much rain you get on the watershed, and then the demand for water from the customers that use Lake Tewakane.
We've heard a lot about the devastating wildfires and how that's affected some state parks, not as much in the Northeast Texas region, but you've heard of Bastrop and Possum Kingdom Lake. Tourism has obviously taken a hit in that area, and as much to the effect of overall in the state a $4.6 million deficit. Do you have an idea of how tourism is affected on the local lakes?
I don't have any figures on it, but I'm sure it must have had an impact on Cooper. If a lot of the recreation that's associated with state park visitation is associated with water sports or fishing, because you can't launch a boat, that's going to limit customers who are going to, come to the lake. And then even during the heat of the summer and into early fall, they're not the most conducive conditions for camping because it's, so hot and uncomfortable. We have suspected that maybe we were going to see actually increased fishing pressure on Lake Fork because there's only one of the marinas that I know of that has had to close its boat ramp because it's too low. But all of the public ramps are usable, so we felt, certainly if there were anglers who were interested in fishing, they would have an opportunity to fish at Fork. So we're kind of expecting to see more traffic headed towards that lake. But I don't have any numbers to say that actually did happen.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know that the state is requesting donations and just encouraging people to come out to these state parks to try to help make up this major deficit here. Can you talk about that a little more for us?
That promotion is to benefit the state parks. It's not to benefit the entire Parks and Wildlife Department. Mm-hmm. It's specifically for the state parks. So an opportunity to donate $5 on a license renewal or to donate a tax-deductible contribution to the Parks and Wildlife Foundation, or another way that the parks could be benefited was to encourage increased visitation. So then the access fees would go, directly to the park.
Finally, Kevin, just curious about your feeling as we move forward, try to get through this drought time. What do you foresee at the area lakes here in Northeast Texas?
The forecasts are not good. Some are less good than others. Some sources are forecasting drought for years, and then some are, on a shorter term, but it should make us more conscious of how precious those water reserves are and maybe encourage conservation or certainly at least have more people consider that as an option rather than just assuming that it's always going to be there and it doesn't matter what it costs, we'll always have it. But, this is just a wake-up call that, water is going to become a very precious resource, and it's going to be the source of a lot of battles and a lot of friction, and we're just beginning to see that.
Kevin Storia is an inland fisheries biologist with the Texas Parks and Wildlife Department and serves as the management supervisor in District 3B here in Northeast Texas. Kevin, thanks for taking the time.
Thank you.
Let's take a break and come back with our Friday feature. That's next. This is The Lead on your station, 88.9 KETR.
We will not be an easy target. We will never roll over and let pain plan our day. We will protect our bodies and fight back by moving. We will do our morning laps, walk our dogs around the block, pass up the elevator, and proudly take the stairs. Because arthritis can't beat us if we beat it first. In the fight against arthritis, you need a weapon. What's yours? To learn more, visit us at fightarthritispain.org. This message brought to you by the Arthritis Foundation and the Ad Council.
You may have been thinking about corporate underwriting on KETR, but don't know how to get started. Let us make it easy for you. Call 903-513-9684. I'm Sherry Gardner. I'll be happy to explain the process step by step. If you like, I can even swing by and drop off some information for you to look at. It's that easy.
Hello, Northeast Texas. It's your old buddy Luke Clayton. I want to invite you to join me on Wednesdays and Saturdays for Outdoors with Luke Clayton. Each week we bring you a new show, and I try to get guests on that I think that you will find very, very interesting. Folks that are expert in catching fish, shooting bows, hunting with muzzle loaders, you name it. We have all the pros on. Remember, it's every Wednesday morning at 11 and every Saturday morning at noon on your station 88.9 KETR.
Welcome back to The Lead here on your station 88.9 KETR, and it's now time for our Friday feature. As you may know, KETR serves as a laboratory for students here at Texas A&M University Commerce, and as we usher in our next cohort of interns for the spring semester and get them settled, we thought we'd revisit some work from the fall semester. Sasha DeHart explores the rather unique experience of this Northeast Texas library in today's Friday feature.
Books. Often the first thing people think of when they hear library. When I went to the W. Waldworth Harrison Public Library, I saw game systems being played by 10 to 12-year-olds with the children's librarian making and passing out popcorn. Normally, the thought of any noise would get a, shh, this is a library. But the library is the one making it possible for so many programs for children of all ages and programs for even adults. I talked to Paul Phelan, the library director at the W. Waldworth Harrison Public Library, on how they are able to support all these different programs.
I readjusted my staff, and I took what would be your normally your adult reference services librarian. Okay. So what I did was I shifted that position to essentially create a program director's position. We have created that position, number one. Number two, we put money in it. One of the things the city let us do was start selling things and create and put that into a donation account. So when you look out front and you see the books for sale out there and the snack machine and we sell water and all that, we make a little bit of profit off all that and it goes into a donation account. So that supplements the budget that we have from the city, because the city does give us, you know, a certain amount of money to do programs like most libraries have, but we're able to make more there. And obviously the Friends of the Library is wonderful. They do a great job for us, not only in giving us money, but in helping us with those kinds of activities. I mean, I have just been blessed to have this group.
I also had the opportunity to talk to the president of the Friends of the Library, Marcia Adams, on what the Friends of the Library does and about the programs that are done at the W. Waldworth Harrison Public Library.
Friends of the Library is a nonprofit organization, and every penny that we make goes to the library. This is probably one of the most active libraries in the county. I'll tell you what I think the key is, and this comes from me as an observer. First of all, we have a director who just rocks. Also, the staff is terrific. They work as a cohesive unit. In the library, we have programs and outreach across the curriculum.
Charlene Allen is a parent who has lived in Greenville for almost 5 years and has been bringing her children to the library for some time. I was able to ask her opinion on the library and the programs they have for children.
Well, I think they're fantastic. I mean, when I first started coming here, there were not as many as there are now, but there were still quite a few. And now it's just phenomenal that pretty much every day of the week, there's something for some group of kids. And they literally have a program, at least one program, every day. You know, it's a very family friendly. They have separate computers for kids as opposed to adults, and those automatically have filters on them, and it's nice.
I got a moment with Lisa Magenheimer, the children's librarian who was in charge of the preteen club program I saw at the library, and was able to ask her about the programs they have for children and teens.
We really start, our youngest main program is story time, and we have kids anywhere from 0 to age 5. Our next level up is a pre-K program that we do here that I haven't seen in any other library, where we only take 3 to 5 year olds, and we actually do weather, ABCs, numbers, seasons, just everything to get them ready to start pre-K. So it's not just a story time, although they get stories. Then after that, we have several programs for 8 to 12 year olds. We have a Lego club, a student story time, and we have a computer lab that we have open to that age group. Either they can play for fun or they can get homework help in that. Then we go to preteens, which is 10, 11, and 12-year-olds only. And then we have a teen club, and we play electronic games in there. And, like, today we're watching a movie, and sometimes we, cook things in the microwave and make snacks and things like that, just things that teens like to do. And those are all of our regular weekly programs.
For more information on any of the programs from children to adults or about the W. Walworth Harrison Public Library in general, check out the City of Greenville website. I'm Sasha DeHart, KETR News.
Sasha DeHart was one of 8 KETR interns from this fall semester. In the coming weeks, we look forward to bringing you stories from our next group of students for the spring semester. Our Friday feature airs each Friday during the lead at 10 o'clock and again at 4:45 p.m. during All Things Considered on your station. And remember, if you have a Friday feature story idea for the program, we'd love to hear it. Send your ideas to me, scott@ketr.org. That's S-C-O-T-T. @ketr.org. And let's take a break. We're back to wrap things up after this on your station, 88.9 KETR.
Public radio listeners are heavy users of bank services, home mortgages, and financial management planning. Are these listeners your customers? They can be. Become a KETR program underwriter. For more information, call 903-513-9684.
These days, people go to great lengths to shed the stress of daily life. There's acupuncture, deep tissue massage, meditation, yoga. But all things considered, we offer our own type of healing, invigorating news stories that span the spectrum of human experience. I'm Robert Siegel. Nourish your mind weekdays on All Things Considered from NPR News. Asylum from the Ordinary.
This afternoon, beginning at 3 on 88.9 KETR.
The mall sure is busy today. Okay, what's on my list? Birthday present for Beth, stop at the electronics store, and then grab a quick bite. Did that guy leave his shopping bag? Looks like there's a package inside, covered in duct tape. Did he leave it on purpose? That can't be right.
Excuse me, security? I just noticed that there's a shopping...
We all play a role in keeping our communities safe. If you see something suspicious, say something to local authorities. If you see something, say something is used with permission by the New York MTA.
Welcome back to The Lead. Thanks for being with us today. It's now time to check out the events calendar for Northeast Texas. A Love and Laughter Marriage Getaway takes place Friday and Saturday night at the YMCA in Greenville. Nationally known authors and speakers Dr. Gary Smiley and Ted Cunningham will be leading this event, instructing participants about communicating better, balancing expectations and reality, and overcoming the major destroyer of relationships. It begins at 7 p.m. Friday and 8:30 a.m. Saturday. The City of Greenville and IESI will conduct a citywide cleanup event for residents from 8 a.m. to 2 p.m. That's Saturday at their IESI facility, which is at 4618 Ed Rutherford Drive. And IESI, under the contract reached with the city, will provide 4 citywide cleanup events each year, the fourth Saturday of January, April, July, and October. And Super Saturday at the Northeast Texas Children's Museum and Commerce is Saturday from 9:30 a.m. to 4:30 p.m., which includes free admission to anyone. A reminder that each one of these events and others can be found at our website, ketr.org/events, and we thank so many people here in the region that submit to that calendar. We always encourage you to do the same by submitting through the Submit Event link at that ketr.org/events webpage. That will do it for today's installment of The Lead. I want to thank my guest, Kevin Story, an inland fisheries biologist with the Texas Parks and Wildlife Department, who gave us perspective on how area lakes and parks are faring during this record drought. Story is the management supervisor in District 3B, which includes Delta, Hunt, Hopkins, Lamar, Raines, Wood, and Van Zandt counties. We also hope you enjoyed our Friday feature from KETR intern Sasha DeHart on the W. Walworth Harrison Public Library in Greenville. We're back same time next Friday at 10 a.m., and our show re-airs at 9 a.m. on Saturdays. And you can hear archives of this show at our website, ketr.org. Coming up next is Texas Matters. This has been The Lead, the exclusive news magazine of Northeast Texas, on your station, 88.9 KETR. I'm your host, Scott Harvey. Thanks for listening. And have a great weekend.